This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Hockey News Podcast. I'm your host, Edward Fraser, here with Ryan Kennedy and Matt Larkin. Ken Campbell's in Saskatchewan, covering the tragedy in Humboldt. Ken, what are some of the reflections you had from yesterday's vigil?
Well, guys, it was a lot of pain, as you can imagine. I thought it was very tastefully and well done. I thought it was something that this community needed. I think there are 6,000 people here in Humboldt, and I believe last night, between the arena, the curling club, and the high school, which are all part of a sort of a uniplex here, there were 5,000 people here. So, almost person for person, everyone in the town was here. They all, they were all wearing their Humboldt Broncos jerseys. They were sharing stories, sharing their grief, sharing some good memories, and I think it was a really good opportunity for people here to come together and sort of start what looks like is going to be a really, really lengthy grieving process.
Ken, the support all around the hockey world has been pretty incredible. I mean, I know Justin Trudeau was there for the vigil. And the GoFundMe account donations are getting into the millions, and I've seen people putting hockey sticks out on their porches sort of in support for the players. Is there anything like that that you've encountered or that just really struck you as particularly incredible?
Well, I mean, you see sort of things all the time, right? Like it's, you talk about the GoFundMe. I mean, the last I heard was $5.2 million, and by the time people are listening to this, that number is going to be hopelessly out of date because it will have grown exponentially by that time. I know that the Saskatchewan Junior League has started a fund here, and they just made the announcement just recently of things that they're going to do to get some corporate help to set up a fund for people to be able to access, for players, for coaches, for volunteers, for billet families, that kind of thing, to be able to access as they go through the grieving process. So, lots of stuff going on. People here being, just being incredible about everything. The hotel I'm staying at, the owner of the hotel also owns the A&W. So at night, last night, just had a bunch of food out for anyone that was staying at the hotel, A&W root beers and just for anybody who needed anything. And you see what hockey means to a community like this. That it means so much. It's so much part of the culture. It's so much part of the heartland. And I mean, we are in Canada's heartland here. This really matters to them. This league matters. These people matter. These players matter. As JHL president Bill Chow was saying today, he said, winters are cold here if you haven't noticed, and springs are cold here if you haven't noticed. And this is something for people to rally around. And it just, to me, the thing that, I was in Saginaw in the days after the Terry Trafford suicide a few years ago. And this is even worse in terms of just the pall you feel that's over the whole area. I mean, there's prairie sunshine that is like so bright here, but it can't break that pall. And I think that's going to last a long, long time here.
Kenny, any updates from any of the police about any of the investigation of the cause of the crash?
Nothing yet. I assume that will be something that will be a fairly lengthy investigation. I think what we do know is that the truck that the semi that hit the bus was traveling westbound, and at about 5 o'clock on Friday night. So driving into the sun, and the it hit the bus it hit the bus that was going northbound. We do know that at the intersection, the westbound part of that intersection, there's a stop sign with a flashing red light. Coming north, there is no stop sign. So you can imagine sort of how people are piecing together what might have happened here, without, you know, really knowing for sure what happened. But it's funny, I was speaking with a truck driver yesterday who, an interesting guy. He was, he played junior B hockey in Ontario, you know, ridden buses all his life, and was also a truck driver based out of Calgary. So he had some pretty unique perspective to share, and he was actually on his way from Winnipeg to Edmonton for to make a delivery, and he just basically said, I had to pull off the highway and come here and be here. And he was saying that, you know, that at this time of year, the sunlight, the prairie sunlight here can be blinding. It's just he even said, you know, that he's like anal about making sure that his windshield is always clear, because he said even if he puts his fingerprints on the windshield and they get on there and the sun hits that, it can really cause some problems for you. He said, you know, like when you drive here, and this is part of your life and part of the way of life for you, you know, when you're driving, you're driving, you know, when you're driving west, you're hoping that you can sort of outrace the sun. You know, you just try to keep it behind you so I mean that seems to be something that's a theory that you know, the sun was a big part of this, and that it caused you know, some debilitating circumstances here, but nothing really official yet.
Obviously, we're very early in this whole process, but what do you feel are the next steps for this community and the hockey community in the healing process?
Well, I think, you know, what's going to be pivotal is what happens after everyone leaves, right? Like after people like me and all the national media and all the visitors and well wishers and all those things, you know, and the community is left to mourn on its own. I think that will be the next pivotal step here along the way. I think, you know, they appear to be, it looks like they're doing all the right things. I mean, Sheldon Kennedy was here today talking about it. And, you know, he mentioned that, you know, when he was involved in the Swift Current bus crash 32 years ago, you know, they didn't know what they know now about mental health and trauma and the effects of trauma and all the things that it can do to someone. And you know, I mean, we do know now a lot of those things. So, you know, I mean, there will be a lot of, I think there will be a lot of support. People are going to need it here. I don't think you can put a timetable on it. I don't think you can sort of say, okay, well, in 6 weeks or in 6 months or in 6 years, everybody here is going to be fine and they're going to move on with their lives. Because I think everybody grieves at a different pace and grieves in different ways, and so it'll be imperative that the people here, you know, that the hockey community, that the province of Saskatchewan, that you know, Canada and people have their backs and can help them, and will understand that if in a year this is still too raw for people and too difficult and they need some help with it. I think that's sort of my takeaway from that, is that, you know, this is going to take a long time. It's going to take a long time. I think it's going to take a long time for people who didn't even know any of these people and don't even live here to process all of this. So, you know, and I really think that, you know, I don't think the hockey community is any more unique than any other in respect to how it supports people and how it helps. But I do think that the hockey community will be here. And I think that you know, people who care about hockey and care about people will be here for the people of Humboldt and all the people affected for a long, long time.
Well said, Kenny. I appreciate your time. Thanks so much, and we'll talk again soon.
Yeah, I just want to say one thing, guys. You know, usually in the podcast we don't take ourselves too seriously, and we, you know, we have a bit of fun with it, and I always try to have a bit of fun with it and joke around. And you know, I wish I could do that today, but I can't. And it's, you know, it's just, I've never seen anything like this before in my life in terms of the amount of grief that's being experienced by these people. I can't imagine what some of these people are going through. And it just really rips your heart out. And I just want everybody to know that there are people here that are in a lot of pain, and they need us right now. They need us. They need everyone to understand and to feel their pain and to help them through it. And I'm sure, as I said previously, I'm sure that the hockey world is going to do just that.
Thanks, Ken.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Ken. Matt, your thoughts on the tragedy?
Well, it's beyond heartbreaking, and I mean, my own dad said it's every parent's worst nightmare. The thing I want anyone listening to remember, and anyone who's touched by the tragedy to remember, is that it doesn't end in a few days. And right now, all the people that have been touched and affected by the tragedy have an overwhelming swell of support. Millions of dollars of donations on GoFundMe. Justin Trudeau in town. Donald Trump is tweeting about the incident. Everyone's talking about Humboldt, and that's going to delay the grief in a certain sense. If anyone's ever lost anybody, they know that there's that sort of, in the first couple of days, that surreality. But I just want everyone to remember that when everyone who's visiting Humboldt leaves, a week from now, that's when the really hard part's going to set in for everybody. So my request to anyone touched by this is don't forget Humboldt. Don't forget about them after a week, because everyone who is affected by the tragedy is going to be dealing with this forever. It's never going to heal. So just keep them in your hearts as long as you can, and don't stop after it's gone from the news cycle.
Mm. That's very well said, Matt. I don't think I can add too much more on top of that. I mean, the universality within hockey culture of what has happened, I think that's why it's hit everybody so hard, is that you have these young men and these coaches and reporters and everybody that was involved. We all know people like them if we didn't know them themselves. And I think you make a very good point there. And I think because it has resonated so deeply, I hope that we do see a lot of outreach for years.
Ken Campbell will be in Saskatchewan for the rest of the week covering the situation, and you can follow that on thehockeynews.com. For now, we turn to the NHL playoffs, and we're going to preview each series, starting with the West and Nashville and Colorado. We're going to break it down by category. So, gentlemen, let's start with the offense in with both of these teams. What do you think from that perspective in this series?
It's interesting because they couldn't be more different the way they've structured themselves. I mean, Colorado's completely top-heavy. It's got one line. It's Gabriel Landeskog, Nathan MacKinnon, Mikko Rantanen, and the game plan is you must stop that line. If you do stop that line, you're fine, because there's no other line on the Avalanche that can score. The Preds, on the other hand, they don't have that marquee scorer. They don't have a MacKinnon. They don't even have a Rantanen, in my opinion. But they're sort of the death of a thousand cuts, where they're extremely deep at forward. They have a lot of 30-goal type guys, Philip Forsberg, Victor Arvidsson, Kevin Fiala's taken a great leap forward. So they're going to get you by just rolling four lines, and obviously by having the best defense in the NHL, offensively and defensively. That big four, Ryan Ellison, Roman Josi, Matias Ekholm, P.K. Subban, they can dominate a game. We saw it last year in the playoffs. It helped Nashville get there. It's going to be their bread and butter again in these playoffs. So I think that's the question. It comes down to stopping the MacKinnon line. And if you do, I think this series could be short.
Yeah, and you look at the actual sort of goals for, they're not too far between the two clubs. I will say that, I mean, you're bang on about Nathan MacKinnon and Mikko Rantanen. MacKinnon, obviously, the most dangerous player in this entire series. But let's not forget, Carl Soderberg and Alexander Kerfoot, they actually had pretty good seasons, and that was very helpful for the Avs, because obviously they had to scratch and claw their way to a playoff spot, and that work was going on throughout the season. I know, speaking with some of the Avs midway through the year, they were pointing to some of those unheralded guys. Now, can those guys get past Nashville's D in a 7-game series? That's going to be a tall order, but if Colorado has any chance, that's going to be how they do it, because I'm sure we're going to see a lot of P.K. Subban on Nathan MacKinnon matchups.
Lots of hype around the addition of Ellie Tolvanen into this lineup. Ryan, as our prospect expert, you've been watching him for years. How much of an impact can he have?
Well, I think he can have an impact, and it's interesting because I was talking to a couple of scouts about this when we were putting together playoff preview, and you know their take, and by the way, neither of them worked for Nashville. Their take was, here's a kid that comes in, and there might almost be sort of a fun naivety to Tolvanen where he doesn't know what the NHL is like yet on a regular basis. He doesn't know the systems the way the rest of the team does, but if he just goes out there and plays and uses that amazing shot of his and uses that creativity, then he could have a real nice impact because he doesn't, in a weird way, he doesn't know any better. If he blows a defensive assignment, well, you know, Nashville has guys to cover that. So, I mean, I could see a situation where Tolvanen gets a key goal, you know, maybe he gets some special teams time and has a nice little impact where, you know, I think round one isn't going to be too much of a problem for the Preds, but as the playoffs go on, I think in the short term, he can have a nice little impact.
I don't think if you're breaking down each series into category, there may be a more lopsided breakdown than Nashville's defense versus Colorado's defense.
Oh, big time. I mean, we knew going into the season that Colorado had one of the weakest blue lines in the NHL, and it definitely has improved a lot this year. I think Nikita Zadorov in particular finally sort of established himself as a real NHL defenseman, but Eric Johnson is out for this series. It's one of your top two. It's your best shutdown guy, so Colorado already at a huge disadvantage. They don't have Eric Johnson. They don't have their starting goaltender, Semyon Varlamov, by the way, either. So I think they're going to be at a huge disadvantage when it comes to preventing chances and keeping pucks out of their net. It puts a lot of pressure on a guy like Tyson Barry, who is an offensive defenseman, and he's not as poor defensively as some people might think, especially in this new age, but he ain't Rod Langway.
Right.
Let's face it, right? So I do expect that Colorado defense will be a bit overwhelmed by Nashville's just transition game, mobility, and even Pekka-Rinne, his ability in net to help start a rush because he's such a good puck handler. I just don't think Colorado's going to have an answer for it.
Yeah, and you know, looking at that defense score, obviously Tyson Barry going to be a big one. Samuel Girard as well. It'll be interesting to see what he can do in his first Stanley Cup playoff action. You know, they do have a couple of good puck movers there, but I mean, Eric Johnson was just everything to that blue line. And, you know, he's an experienced guy in the dressing room. He's got great size. It's just going to be really tough sledding because it was already going to be an uphill battle for the Avs.
It's amazing to think, and I think it got lost very much so in Vegas's amazing run this year. But Colorado, if it wasn't for Vegas, Colorado would easily be the story of the season. I mean, this is a team that set the lowest points percentage since the lockout.
Right.
I mean, this team was terrible last year, and to reach the playoffs has been a remarkable feat. What's an X factor in this series for Colorado that could maybe big-time upset push them past the Nashville Predators?
I see, too, and it's a great point, Colorado story. It's funny, I laugh. At the beginning of the season, someone said, pick your bottom three teams, and I said, Colorado, New Jersey, Vegas.
Whoops!
Yeah, what can you do? But I think, one, there's an emotional X factor. I mean, Colorado's got absolutely nothing to lose. Nashville's got everything to lose. Mm-hmm. It's very different from last year, where the Preds were the number 16 seed.
Yep.
Now they're the top dog, the President's Trophy winners for the first time in franchise history. They are expected to go all the way. I don't think just make the final. They made it last year. I think Nashville is expected to win the cup. They're the favorites.
We expect it to
win. We expect to win the cup. That's right. Yeah. They're our pick. So they're going to face a type of pressure they've never faced before. It'll be interesting to see how they handle that. And I think if there's an X factor, I guess it's Nathan MacKinnon. I mean, he is the kind of guy who could take the team on his back. And I think if Colorado wins any games in this series, it's going to be because MacKinnon steals one or two.
Mm. And I would say an X factor going the other way for Nashville is that Colorado had to play all the way to game 82. And they had to play St. Louis, the team that they were chasing by a point, in order to get in. I just wonder if there was so much emotional capacity spent in the past few weeks, even few months, if you think about it, getting to this point that eventually you just have to drop off a cliff. And that's why I think this will be a very short series, because that emotional capital, I feel it could be all spent just getting into the playoffs for Colorado.
The one thing I would say about this series is because Nashville's such a large underdog, and especially Nashville's such a favorite in this series, and especially at home where they are, I think, you know, no team gets a boost from home ice as much as Nashville does. Mm. If Colorado was to steal a game, it sets in some doubt and really, really boisters Colorado's confidence. Mm-hmm. So that the for them to sweep at home, or I guess hold at home, it's going to be very important for the Nashville Predators in this series, in my mind.
Yeah.
Obviously, I think we all know which way the two of you are picking, but let's just go through why Nashville will win this series.
Yeah, I've got the Predators in five. I think it's a very lopsided matchup just because Colorado is so top-heavy. It's one of the deepest teams in the league versus one of the shallowest teams in the playoff field and a team that's missing two of its most important players. So I see McKinnon stealing a game for them. So I think Colorado wins like game three with a boost on home ice. Just, you know, the fans fired up, the team fired up. But I say Preds in five.
Yeah, I say Preds in four. We've seen Nashville sweep teams last year in the playoffs. They seem to take care of business pretty quickly, and I think they'll do so again.
Moving on to the other divisional series in the Central, Winnipeg and Minnesota. This one's shaping up to be a little more competitive. Let's look first at the offense of these two clubs.
Well, I mean, if you look at Winnipeg, one of the best offenses in the league, you look at the weapons at their disposal, starting with Patrick Laine, but also Mark Scheifele, Nikolaj Ehlers, Blake Wheeler. Like, you can, you know, pretty much go down the line, and they have unparalleled depth, especially with Kyle Connor coming up, Paul Stastny coming over for St. Louis. You know, Minnesota does have nice weapons, no doubt about that. But when you look at that Winnipeg offense and you look at what they can trot out on the power play, and I know we'll get into this a bit later in the segment, but no Ryan Suter for the Wild on the back end. I just think that blows a huge hole in Minnesota's hull. And when I look at Winnipeg, I see a team that is just like cresting at the right time this season. It feels like their chance to make a deep run, even though Nashville is lurking there in the second round. But I just think there's so much firepower up front with Winnipeg. And, you know, I mean, like I say, the Wild, they've got nice weapons. Eric Staal, amazing year for him. But I just think it's going to be too much.
Just a quick aside before we get in. Kyle Connor. What the hell?
Yeah, man. He always had it. I mean, we've always loved him. I always remember the quote from Ryan when you were first scouting him for the draft in 2015, jersey flapping speed.
Yeah.
The guy can fly, and he just needed a bit of extra season. Kind of like Mikko Rantanen a couple years ago, where he had to go back to the AHL, lit it up, just like Connor lit up the AHL and then was ready. And I think that's just one more weapon. Even like Jack Roslovic, the checking forward, it just shows the Jets have an advantage over every single team in the West in terms of offensive star power. They have big, dangerous weapons, and they can roll so many dangerous lines. They remind me of the Leafs in that way, that they can overwhelm teams because you cannot key your shutdown players on any one line, especially when you have, you know, Scheifele and Wheeler, but you have Laine on a different line. So who do you key on?
Pick your poison.
Right, pick your poison. And the Wild are interesting. I think they're much better offensively this year in terms of their versatility. I mean, their defense, they have one of the highest scoring blue lines in the league, and Matt Dumba really took a big leap forward in that regard. And last year, what they didn't really have was a true 30-goal threat, and now all of a sudden you have Eric Staal really busting out and Jason Zucker getting his first 30-goal season, Michael Granlund. So I don't think the Wild are nothing offensively, but there's just no comparing to the Jets. I think the Jets are as dangerous as any team in the league offensively.
Mm-hmm. Is there really any way that the Minnesota unit can come together to overcome the loss of Ryan Suter?
I think if they do, it's got to be on the front end, because the Wild do have defensively solid forwards, whether it's Zucker, Mikko Koivu, Eric Staal, Nino Niederreiter. Like, they do have a defensively responsible group. Even Joel Eriksson-Ek, for a young guy, that's one of the strengths of his game. Mm-hmm. So I think the shutting down is going to have to happen more from the forward end, because defensively, on the blue line, the talent's just not going to be there. I think it's just, it was always a problem with the Wild that they leaned too heavily on Ryan Suter, and now they're really exposed. Not only can they not depend on him, he's gone altogether. I don't think they can recover from that.
Yeah, he's just too much of a part of their defense and their team strategy overall, because he does so many different things and he plays so many minutes. And when you get into these playoff series where you do have unlimited overtime, those minutes can really start to stack up. And if you don't have that depth, you can really put yourself behind the eight ball. And as Matt was saying, the Jets just come at you in waves. And, you know, you want a guy like Ryan Suter out there to give yourselves at least a passing chance at winning. And without him, I just think it's going to be too difficult.
Hellebuyck, though, unproven. That's the mm-hmm. one thing in this series that if he falters, I mean, and he's shown no signs of it, but he played more than he's played in his pro any time in his career, never been battle tested in the playoffs.
Yes, and I'm glad you mentioned that, Ed, because that is my X factor. It is goaltending. The biggest difference between the Jets last year and the Jets this year, I mean, yes, a guy like Kyle Connor had a great year, but it was goaltending. Mm. I mean, last year the Jets had a lot of the same guys they had this year, but their goaltending was terrible. Hellebuyck made that huge leap forward, and look at the way that the team's fortunes and the standings change. So if there's an X factor, it's Devan Dubnyk out-dueling Connor Hellebuyck. I don't think it's going to happen. Mm. I think having interviewed Hellebuyck a bunch of times, he's like one of the coolest, calmest dudes I've ever met in hockey. Mm. He's just like nothing seems to get to him. And Dubnyk's track record in the playoffs, he was pretty decent last year, but overall it hasn't been great. So I do think Hellebuyck will win the battle, but I absolutely agree it's an X factor. If Hellebuyck somehow shows jitters and Dubnyk starts looking good early in the series, then we have to rethink things.
Yeah, and Hellebuyck, you know, when he was at UMass Lowell, he did go to a Frozen Four tournament. The Riverhawks did not win, but they did some damage, and you know, so you pick up those experiences along the way. But I would agree that that's a big X factor. Is that's the only thing we don't know at this point is what does Connor Hellebuyck look like in a 7-game series?
It's an interesting coaching matchup as well because, I mean, we were all wondering last year how Paul Maurice was still employed, mm-hmm. You know, with his struggles to get his teams into the playoffs year after year. Obviously, looks like a genius this year with what he's been able to do with this club, admittedly with a lot of star power at his disposal. And on the other side, Bruce Boudreaux, who tons of regular season success, very little playoff success. He's going to be asked to really game plan around the loss of Ryan Suter. Who would you give the edge in the coaching matchup in what at the beginning of the season would seem like lopsided, but now not so much?
I think you got to give it to Paul Maurice, and I'm the guy that was always railing against Paul Maurice. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the biggest thing you've seen that usually is a reflection of coaching that's changed in Winnipeg this year is special teams. Their power play is suddenly really good after it was subpar. The penalty killing's been good. I think Paul Stastny's helped with that as well. If I'm not mistaken, he's been getting some PK time.
That's a great pick.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And with Boudreaux, unfortunately, I mean, the guy's never been... He's been to round three once. It was 2015 conference final, right, with the Ducks. But... The past failures, I do think, start to follow him around, and you are only human if you let it get into your head. And whereas Paul Maurice, actually, he's been to a Stanley Cup final in 2002. It's mm-hmm. a while back, but he's been there before. So I do think you have to give the edge to Maurice because he doesn't have that sort of juju following him around.
For what it's worth, Bruce Boudreaux's winning percentage in the playoffs, .494. Paul Maurice's, .439.
Oh, there you go. Mm.
And I almost feel like it's tough because, again, with the loss of Ryan Suter, you know, Minnesota, I don't any chance they might have had, I feel, has been greatly decimated here. But it's like if they lose, then it's another playoff series loss for Bruce Boudreaux. But this one feels a lot different where it's like, I don't know what else he could have done. It's not like there was like a matchup where he froze Andy Reid style at the end of the series. It's just sort of like, well, you don't have the horses. So it's a tough one.
Any chance we don't see a Winnipeg-Nashville divisional series?
Feels very remote.
Yeah, I think that the Winnipeg series and the Nashville series are going to go combined 9 games because I have the Jets sweeping, which is crazy. Usually I'm not very brave when it comes to picking sweeps. I don't know if I ever have picked a sweep, but I'm doing it this time. I think Winnipeg's going to run through Minnesota. Mm. Jets in 4.
Yeah, I have Jets in 5. I feel like Minnesota is like, you know, they're sturdy enough that they can maybe pull out one win. But yeah, I think it's going to be a short series.
The Vegas Golden Knights and the LA Kings play in the first series of the Pacific Division. Vegas, I think, despite their success, this is still a team, because of their relatively unknown players, are relatively unknown to non-Vegas hockey fans. Tell us what makes this team so successful and the fact that
it's really not that surprising that they've achieved this success.
I mean, I think everyone underestimated the talent they have on the team. I mean, at the same time, some of the guys, I mean, Jonathan Marchessault, everyone knew that was a great pickup. But a guy like William Karlsson, I mean, no one in a million years knew he would be a 40-goal scorer. And even Erik Haula, 29-goal scorer.
Haula.
And I think what makes Vegas so dangerous is, I mean, they're deep, but also I think they're very well coached by Gerard Gallant, and they play with so much speed, yeah. Ferocity. It's a constant buzzing hornet's nest on the forecheck, and there's a nice combination of speed and grittiness there. I feel like there's still some people. I was asked the other day, well, are they better tailored to the regular season? But I think no, they can play with grit as well. They're a bit of both, so they have the modern speed but also the grit to survive when the refs put the whistles away a little bit in the playoffs. And I think offensively, that's the big advantage in the series that Vegas does have. I mean, the Kings, I feel like it's since like the Gretzky early 90s days, the Kings are just not a team that scores a lot of goals. And I still think it's going to be a problem for them in this series. And Vegas has just got that depth and that aggressive forecheck. So I think it's a nice advantage for them.
Yeah, they're definitely one of the fastest teams in the league. And when I was talking to execs and local writers for our playoff preview story on Nashville and Winnipeg, a couple were saying that, you know, like one of the only teams that gave Nashville problems this year was Vegas. And the reason was, the Golden Knights are just so fast and they play at such a high pace. And of course the question was, are the playoffs going to be called the same way? Are they going to be played the same way? And I think that's a big question mark. And I actually wrote a blog saying that I believe Los Angeles is going to win this series because the Kings have been actually playing faster under John Stevens than they did under Daryl Sutter.
Who would have thought Dustin Brown would be skating?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So you got Dustin Brown. And then, of course, like Jeff Carter missed a huge chunk of the season, but he's back now. So it's almost like a free trade deadline acquisition. And obviously Andre Kopitar up front having a year where he's going to get some Hart Trophy votes for sure. I would say, you know, good chance he wins the Selke as well. But when you're looking at offense, you know, Vegas has the advantage there, but it's not that much more pronounced, I think, for playoff hockey, particularly because of the Kings' experience.
I mean, I don't think there's any doubt, at least not in my mind, that the Kings are the far defensively superior team, especially when we're lumping in goaltending into defense here, and you've got the Jennings winning quick behind the net. He really seems to have recaptured any form he had maybe lost over the past couple seasons.
Yeah, and I do think it's funny. I think the series is really close because I see a big offensive advantage for Vegas, but a big defensive advantage for LA. I mean, they're not as... I mean, we thought they weren't as stingy as they were under Daryl Sutter, but I mean, the numbers say they were. Mm-hmm. They won the Jennings. Mm-hmm. And they've got so many experienced guys who are great players at both ends of the ice. I mean, obviously on defense, you know, your Drew Doughtys, your Jake Muzzins are still dominant, especially in the possession game, but also Jeff Carter's an underrated two-way player. And Kopitar, I think, it's interesting, even though he's a defensive specimen, he can also score a ton, but I feel like in terms of the guys he's trying to shut down, there's no match for Kopitar in this series. Kopitar's the best player, the best forward on either team, and I don't see any Vegas player being a match for Kopitar, so I think Kopitar's going to win. Whatever line he's assigned to shut down, he will shut down successfully, so I think it's going to be very close in that way. But an interesting factor is goaltending. I'm going to go against the grain on this one.
All right.
The automatic assumption is Jonathan Quick, Mr. Playoffs, Marc-Andre Fleury, Mr. Non-Playoffs. But they're both dining out on reputations that I don't think are accurate anymore. Jonathan Quick, last couple times in the playoffs, especially his most recent series, he was not very good. And I don't think we can always lean on his Conn Smythe year. And Marc-Andre Fleury, on the flip side, everyone remembers, especially that series against Philly in 2012 where he got shelled. But the last several years, he's been quite good in the playoffs. And he was a key reason why the Penguins even got to the conference final last year. So I think he's actually underrated. And to me, goaltending is actually a wash in this series, not an advantage for LA.
How much is the home ice advantage going to play into this? I mean, Vegas, throughout the regular season, for most of it, they just didn't lose at home.
Yeah, and it's funny because if there's one team that is probably immune to the Vegas flu, it's Los Angeles because they live in Los Angeles. You know, it's like, what? Oh, Vegas is an exciting town. It's like, yeah, well, you know, like Jerry Bruckheimer comes to our games and, you know, like we see celebrities all the time in LA. This is something we're used to. You know, you have the whole LA Live experience around the Staples Center. I mean, these are guys that are accustomed to distractions, and they've figured out a pretty good way to compartmentalize that. So I think, and I wrote this on the website, yesterday that if Vegas had played any other team, you know, if it was Anaheim or San Jose in the first round, I would have picked Vegas. But because it's Los Angeles, I feel like they're kind of the older, wiser brothers to the Golden Knights, where it's like, yeah, you guys had a really good season, but we know what we're doing here.
Well, the experience level is obviously far tilted in the Kings' favor. I mean, they've got 11 players with cup rings. Vegas has one, Marc-Andre Fleury. So if the playoffs, and it is a different breed of hockey, and if you have to learn how to win, that certainly plays into the Kings' hands.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I'm glad you said because it's the Kings, Ryan, because to me, an X factor that I like for Vegas is because they drew the Kings, and the Kings have that mystique around them, I think Vegas is going to be an underdog to a lot of people, which is perfect. So Vegas doesn't go into the playoffs suddenly with expectations. They get to be the underdog again. And the underdog stories work great for them all year. They've had no pressure on themselves. And I think they can use that again to surprise a team again, kind of like what they did in the regular season. I like that.
Yeah.
As a little underdog factor, X factor for Vegas.
Yeah, and it's funny because I'm kind of the opposite tack, where I look at the Kings and here's a team that still has most of the core from those two Stanley Cup title teams, but they haven't had much success lately. And I look at a guy like Drew Doughty, I look at a guy like Quick and Kopitar and Carter, I feel like they're not the kind of guys that would be like, yeah, we got two cups, that's fine. I think they take this kind of thing personally. And they go into these playoffs and say, we're the Los Angeles Kings, and people should fear us because, you know, we know how to win Stanley Cups. We haven't done it lately. We haven't shown our best, but this is a time to rectify that. And I think they have a lot of motivation on their end to say that, you know, we're not willing to cede the crown of the West to the Nashvilles and Winnipegs just yet.
I have a feeling this is going to be the first series where I'm going to be called upon to settle a tie. So, Matt, you're picking Vegas in
seven. I think it's a very close series, and I think it's going to come down to the home ice in Game 7, which I still think it's going to be a raucous atmosphere in Vegas. I mean, we haven't even seen what it's going to be yet. And I think people are going to be scratching their heads after the series saying, oh, damn, we did it again. We underestimated Vegas again. What were we thinking? But I think it's a very even series. And it's going to be close. So, Golden Knights in seven.
And I'm going Los Angeles in six. They'll wrap it up before that raucous Game 7 occurs. I think the Kings are going to put their stamp on these playoffs early and say, that was cute, Vegas. But maybe next year.
Yeah, I looking at this series closely, I tend to agree with Ryan. I just think that LA, with their seasoned vets on this squad and just the star power they have. I agree with you, Matt, totally in goaltending, but with Anze Kopitar, incredible bounce back season, and you know, one of the top three defensemen in the world in Drew Doughty, I do think it's the Kings, and I agree with Ryan. I don't think it gets back to Vegas for Game 7. I would take the Kings in six. So place your bets if you're a betting man. Of course, once we actually do our official prediction, when we talk it out, maybe that changes.
Right.
you might want to wait on that. Final series in the West, San Jose and Anaheim, another Battle of California. This was a series that also looks to be a close one. Let's look at the offense first.
Offensively, I like Anaheim better. It's because it's got better forward depth. I mean, you know, Ryan Getzlaf's great. Rickard Rakell, really underrated, great goal scorer. And Anaheim in the playoffs suddenly magically gets this great second line every year because Jacob Silverberg is like, hey, guess what, everybody? I'm a point-per-game player only in the playoffs. So, and I think Adam Henrique was a nice addition, too. The Sharks are a little banged up. I mean, it doesn't look like Joe Thornton's going to be ready for the start of the series. And I know Evander Kane's health is even a little bit in question. So I like Anaheim to have a slight edge on the offensive side of the puck.
Evander Kane, actually an incredible pickup for San Jose for a very low price.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for me, that's part of the reason. I mean, I'll take San Jose when it comes to offense, just that they perform better overall during the season. And I think the way Evander Kane has played since the trade from Buffalo kind of offsets the fact that Joe Thornton hasn't been around. And it is tight for sure between these two teams. I mean, when we look at a lot of these categories, I think they're pretty similar in a lot of regards. But, you know, when you have Brent Burns on the back end there, and you have some of the young guys, I think not getting a lot of credit this year in San Jose. I feel like a lot of us have been kind of in sleep mode when it comes to the Sharks, just because they haven't been the story of
Kevin,
the West.
Kevin LeBanc has been fantastic.
Straight to the bank.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's his Twitter handle. Yeah, I mean, you just have a really good complement of guys. You don't have anybody that has like 100 points or anything like that, but you just have a really solid group, and it seems to be coming along organically, which I think is important. And then, you know, with Kane, he has all the motivation in the world. You know, in the playoffs for the first time. Hmm. What's Evander Kane going to do when he's like unleashed in the postseason? I think that's going to be really fun. And yeah, Anaheim, obviously, they've got some very nice weapons as well. But I think San Jose's got just a little bit more offense.
The biggest question mark in this series for me is can Corey Perry and Ryan Getzlaff have that? I mean, they've faded significantly. Can they find that extra gear one last time to kind of propel Anaheim into a situation where they can at least compete for one last cup?
And it's a very fair question, because if you look at the Ducks, I mean, they're banged up, and we'll talk about it when it comes to the defense in particular. But, you know, when you look at the Ducks, they need Getzlaff and Perry to be pretty big. And, you know, I think having Adam Henrique come in the Sami Vatanen trade, that definitely did a lot for their depth. But, I mean, this is overall a team that really leans on the Greybeards. And, you know, San Jose, that's a team that's got some big dudes. I don't think it's going to be a polite series. and maybe that's good for guys like Getzlaff and Perry and Ryan Kesler, because they like to play that kind of hockey. But it can take a toll, and it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out if it goes 6 or 7.
Let's talk about that banged-up defense. Obviously, Anaheim had to lose a couple of parts this year. Losing Vatanen in the
Henrique trade,
sorry, and of course Shea Theodore into Vegas early on in the season. So what was probably the deepest and youngest defense in the league now looks pretty thin.
Yes, exactly, especially with Cam Fowler gone. So suddenly it's your huge surplus, it's your strength of your team, and all of a sudden, I'm not going to go as far as calling it a weakness, but it's not nearly as fearsome. And I think that's going to be the deciding factor in this series, the fact that the Ducks don't have Cam Fowler. And yes, Josh Manson's been great, and I love Hampus Lindholm, but it's not Brent Burns and Mark Edward Vlasic.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be the key factor in the series. I think both teams have good defensive forwards. I think they're both really deep. They have great veteran presences, both having pretty old forward cores. But I just don't think there's an answer to Burns and Vlasic in particular. Burns for his ability to sort of control a game, Vlasic for his shutdown ability. So I see the Sharks having the edge on the defensive side in this series.
Yeah, and also we're learning Kevin Bieksa has been banged up as well. So that's another top six guy for you. Like, Francois Beauchemin is still in their top six, and that's kind of scary for me at this point in his career, where you're looking at a guy that, I mean, maybe this is his last season. Maybe he plays one more. But, you know, because of San Jose's depth up front, you do kind of need all hands on deck when it comes to the Ducks defense, and right now they're shorthanded in kind of a cruel way with Fowler out.
Who gets the edge in goaltending in this series?
It's funny, talent wise, it should be Anaheim. Like, John Gibson's great, he's a super talented goalie. He had a great year when he was on the ice. But it's funny, as a guy who had him on my fantasy team, I can tell you he gets pulled from a game with an injury like every 2 weeks. Gibson, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's his fault, if it's bad luck. He had a stretch where an eight game stretch where he got pulled with an injury 3 times in 8 games. And he's banged up right now. His status to start game one is in doubt. And even if he's in the game, it seems like, just like Ben Bishop, maybe even more so, Gibson's a threat to get knocked out of the game all the time. He's just prone to pulls and aches and strains and bruises. So because of that, I think I got to lean Martin Jones, because we know he's going to be in the net. Whereas right. Gibson, I mean, it could just as easily be Ryan Miller. And Miller's had a great career, but he's, you know, getting close to 40 years old. So I lean Sharks.
Yeah, I feel like Martin Jones is just the unfussy choice, where like, we don't really talk about Martin Jones much, because he doesn't really do anything wrong. You know, he kind of just goes about his business. He's a solid contributor to that San Jose team. And I certainly share your concerns with John Gibson, where he's already banged up. And this is not the time of year where you want to be deciding on who's going to be your netminder, particularly when you're facing a team like the Sharks that has some nice weapons up front. So it's, I mean, it wouldn't be surprising if Gibson, you know, when he does come back, if he reeled off several excellent starts, but it's the uncertainty just bothers me.
Yeah, obviously, the injury woes in net for Anaheim is an X factor. Is there something else, though, that you're looking at in this series?
I think I like what Ryan said about Evander Kane, because we've never seen what he can do in the playoffs, and he's such a he's a physical specimen. He's a big, powerful guy, and he's almost got an old schoolness about him, like a throwback Brendan Shanahan when he's on. And I do feel like Kane was always built to be a better playoff player than regular season player because of the fact that the refs let things go a bit more. So I'm curious, assuming Kane is healthy enough, if he dominates the series and sort of has a coming out party.
Yeah, I like that. And I'm going to make a fearless prediction that at some point in the series, Evander Kane's going to fight someone, and it's going to be a huge boost for the Sharks.
Interesting. I think this is the first one where I'm not exactly sure which way you guys are going in this series. So Matt, your prediction?
I'm going Sharks in seven. I think it's going to be a war, like Ryan alluded to, but with the health factor being slightly in San Jose's favor, even though, I mean, Joe Thornton's not healthy, but I still think the injuries the Ducks have are worse. So I say Sharks in seven.
Yeah, I say Sharks in seven as well. And I will point out that originally I said Anaheim in seven, and then when I looked at their injuries a little closer, I was like, I'm just a little too nervous about that. So I'm going San Jose.
The Minnesota-Winnipeg series gets underway on Wednesday, as is Los Angeles and Vegas. We'll be back tomorrow to queue up the rest of the series, that most of which get underway on Thursday. For Matt Larkin and Ryan Kennedy, I'm Edward Fraser. Thanks for listening.